everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my buddy John Couch, engineering and producing the program on the other side of the glass. Together, we welcome you to our midweek edition of the Buckmaster program. It's Wednesday, May the 13th, 2020. Happy birthday to Ray Allen, our operations manager here at KVOI. We are practicing safe distancing while bringing people together from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on 1030 Tucson's Voice for Trusted News Talk, worldwide live listening on our website, buckmastershow.com, where we piggyback with KVOI.com. Make sure you get the live stream. Podcasts available 24/7 at buckmastershow.com. The live line number 790-2040. Let's begin with the Buckmaster Show contributor on education, Dr. Robert Hendricks, professor, associate professor emeritus at the University of Arizona College of Education. He is the former superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District. Dr. Hendricks was named Arizona's top school superintendent in 1989. He is also a board member of Interfaith Services Food Bank. Dr. Hendricks, how are you?
I'm doing as well as can be expected, Bill.
Well,
how about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. How are they doing at the food bank?
Well, they've been extremely busy, as you could well imagine. And but they haven't run out of food. We've had a lot of generous donations from our partner churches. We have many, many churches that contribute and bring in food as well as financial donations. So we're coming along. It's more than food. It's the utility assistance and the rent and all the other things that people are saddled with during this difficult time.
Well, a bit of a shocker, the University of California higher education system, Dr. Hendricks made an announcement yesterday, and on a national level, they're being criticized as making this decision too soon, but I believe it involves 25 to 30 campuses of the university system. They're saying they're going all online in the fall. That is a huge decision, and I would imagine they're going to have to adjust tuition because some of those tuitions, as you know, are some of the highest in the United States.
They are. They are. And I think there's going to be a lot of pushback from that. And of course, there are groups already of students who are joining together in a class action suit after California University, as well as other universities across the country, saying, hey, this is not what we paid for, and we want a rebate. So I can see where they're going to have to look at making some adjustments for the fall, which I think other institutions and systems, including K-12, are going to have to do as well.
Tell me about, you know, we still don't know, Dr. Hendricks, whether or not we're going to have school here at TUSD in the fall. If there is school, how are things going to be different? Let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, I think, first of all, I don't know if you listened to Dr. Fauci yesterday talking about this new syndrome, which is sort of an offshoot of the virus, which is affecting young people. And so that's a whole new wrinkle. I mean, I think we, for a while, we thought that not that youngsters would be disinfected, but that they wouldn't have the same issues of vulnerability. But now we're hearing, you know, when these cases are occurring across the country, they're not large numbers at this point, but the vulnerability of children, I think, is going to make it even more difficult for schools to decide what they should do. And the Academy of Pediatrics has come out with a number of guidelines, but those guidelines include running school in very, very different ways. And I'm thinking worst case scenario that we could be looking at a hybrid model where students spend some of their time in school and some of their time online. That's assuming that we can still, you know, operate with some degree of social distancing. But, you know, we still have that issue of, you know, what do you do with a group of 30 students? You know, and some people have suggested, well, the only way to make that work is, you know, start dividing that number, start working in smaller groups of 10 students or 12 students. If you're going to do that, you can't have all the students in the school at the same time. So maybe you run an alternative day schedule where students come in, certain groups come in, group A comes in on Mondays and Wednesdays, and group B comes in on Tuesdays and Thursdays, or something like that. I mean, we've done that before with overcrowded schools. We've had formulas where we could bring students in different ways. So that's a possibility that, you know, teachers could be working with students in smaller groups, but in multiple groups. And that's complicated. But what makes it really complicated to me is, where do the parents fit into all of this? I mean, I have some friends who are parents of younger students, and they're, you know, these are people who are responsible adults and responsible parents, and they are really frustrated right now. They don't know, you know, they're being called back to work. They don't know who's going to take care of the child arrangements. And, you know, we get some kind of hybrid schedule, it's going to be continue to be complicated. And I think a lot of parents are hoping, well, summer's coming, this issue is going to be over. And so come August, come September, we're going to be back to normal. Well, I'm not sure the new normal is going to be like the old normal. So we're not sure what we're going to do with students. It's a complexity. And I've talked to some school administrators who say, look, if we have to go to this kind of staggered schedule, we're going to lose a lot of students because parents, it's too complicated. It's too much of a burden on them, and they're going to find some other option. And one of the options might be, let's just find an all day online school.
Yeah.
You know, where, I mean, I see where that could be easily promoted, because there's no way that a lot of parents are going to be able to juggle this kind of schedule. They're not making it work right now, even though a lot of them are trying. But you've got a home that is being converted to a workplace.
It's Bob Hendricks, let's face it, it has been a disaster. It really has.
It's going to get worse.
And I'm telling you, this is the biggest crisis facing not only higher education, but all of education in this country's history. I could see people of means, if you had the money, you could have going back to what was done in the Middle Ages, you could have individual tutors who will come to the home, and that will then become the child's learning source. I mean, there are all sorts of things that you could see happening out of this.
Well, and then the other thing is, I think it's really going to narrow the curriculum, because they're only going to focus on the key core subject areas. And there will be no PE, and there will be no art, and there'll be no music, unless, as you say, if it's a person of means, they could bring in a music tutor or somebody. But for the rest of the world, it's chaos.
Yep.
It's absolute chaos. So we don't know. Fauci said yesterday, in his humble opinion, he doesn't know what it's going to look like. He can't crystal ball gaze this. And I'm thinking, and here you got one of the top, you know, experts in the country who can't predict what September is going to look like in schools. And so I think everybody is just running around with a lot of paranoia and a lot of anticipation and anxiety, and not knowing what to do.
Yeah, and it goes with the California system now out of the picture. This goes back to what Dr. Robbins said on this program a month ago, predicting there would be no Pac-12 college football. You can take that now. That's off the table. If California schools are going to be online, they're not going to be playing football in the Pac-12.
No.
But that's
and,
over.
You know, I think of high school students and the socialization process of school and how sports are so important and how chorus is so important and art and the drama programs. And all of those things are being set aside. And so if we go to the basics, we're going to lose so much of the whole child. You know, the total child is what education is supposed to be about. And we don't have that. It's going to be fragmented.
Yep, and then they'll have to make a decision here very soon, TUSD and all these districts. I don't
absolutely.
And this whole thing with this rare inflammatory syndrome, even though it's just a very small, I think it's like less than 100 cases, it is enough to freak out, I'm sure, parents across the country, and that's going to be a big, big deal going forward. We are out of time. Dr. Hendricks, always a pleasure. We could talk to you. We could talk to you every day about these education issues because they're changing.
And there'll be something a little bit different each day.
I know. Thank you very much, sir. Thanks.
You're most welcome.
Dr. Robert Hendricks, the Buckmaster Show contributor. And I think we can sum this whole education thing up. It is a mess. Anyway, Mona's Danish Bakery is now open for limited in-bakery dining. Mona's located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. All of your favorite bakery goods, of course, the Danish Kringle and everything else available for you. They are weathering the storm like everybody else, and I'll tell you, comfort food is a huge deal right now. And you say bakery goods to me, and I get comfortable. Goes back to my childhood days going to the bakery there in Wilmette, Illinois, when Mom would take me to get some beautiful donuts before going down to the beach on Lake Michigan. So there's all sorts of things built into bakery goods. It's a feel-good thing, and I'm sure it would make you feel good right now by stopping by Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. The website's monasdanishbakery.com. Lots to talk about with the vice mayor of the city of Tucson, Paul Cunningham. He'll be with us for the next two segments. We'll be keeping him until about 12:45, and he's on the live line ready to go after this.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com. The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
It's easy being green. Promote wind, install solar, drive electric cars, ban mining. Wait a minute! You can't ban mining! Green is good, but hey, no can do without the metals green products need from mining. If you ban mining, you'll ban everything green. And today's minds are on board, researching technologies that provide critical materials for a greener world. Being green, another miracle from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Let's welcome the Vice Mayor of the City of Tucson, Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham. Paul, how is your day going?
It's been interesting. The roof pipe to the dryer broke, and so I'm fixing it right now.
There you go. You heard some of the interview with Dr. Hendricks. Paul Cunningham, we are looking at the unraveling of the elementary school system in this country, and you're a teacher.
Yeah. It's I think it's very early to tell with the pediatric cases. I think it's really early to tell. Again, I've been saying this from the beginning. The three things: it's going to be testing. It's going to be treatment protocols and RCTs being published, and it's going to be ultimately the vaccine and obviously the efficacy, if there is any, of convalescent plasma. Three things that we really need to keep our eye on. It will take some time for, let's just say, nothing happens. Let's say the convalescent plasma trials demonstrate there's really no advantage, and it doesn't lower the mortality rate. Let's say that intermediate testing or widespread testing with quick results results in mortality rate as far as getting earlier treatment. Let's just say that the study that came out that was a phase two trial about interferon and Calitra used as an early intervention and had a 100% survival rate. Let's just say that that was a lucky thing and the phase three trial doesn't do anything. And let's say that the vaccines all fail and we have to wait another year. Well, again, then we're kind of going to be doing what we're doing, where we're going to be on again, off again. It's not going to be very clean, and it will take a long time for this, for the whole world to recover. We have bigger things. We have bigger problems if that's the case. But let's go back to and say, let's say we go 7 for 7. Let's do the best case scenario. And the RCTs are published over the next 3 or 4 weeks. And we find a lot of different drug protocols that show some tremendous efficacy. And we're one trial away from finding a combination of those protocols that demonstrate very low mortality rates. And let's say that our vaccine kind of hits in November or December, and it's pretty successful. And let's say that then we're going to be back to work a lot faster. And so I think it's a pretty open thing. And a lot of people want to see everything in black and white. Like, we're in an epidemic. We're in a global crisis. The world's over and we've got to do all this and that and the other. And then other people are saying it's nothing. There's nothing to this and we should ignore it, which is, again, that's probably the most irresponsible thing you can say. But I think there's a medium in there. It's a little bit of both, and you've got to kind of see the silver linings where they are, and you've got to see the realities of where they are. I don't know if we're going to end up closing schools. That isn't my call, but my gut tells me, based on this inflammatory syndrome that some of the kids have, if they can find ways to neutralize it fast enough, then again, that won't be the threat we're worried about. The threat we're going to be worried about is a mutation of the virus that we can't fight, or other things. I mean, there's so many different things here, but
yeah,
now we've come a long way in the last 60 days, 90 days of understanding this disease. And I got to believe that this is just another battle that America will come through on.
Yeah, I'm going to take the very optimistic approach. When I'm looking at what's being done right now with the vaccines, some of these manufacturers are ready to start manufacturing this summer. So I'm going to go and hang my hat on that. I think we're going to have a vaccine in the fall, and I think that's what it's going to take. All of these measures, people are not going to feel comfortable until there is a vaccine. Meanwhile, the Pima County Board of Supervisors, have you heard anything about they were expected to codify into the health code up to 17 different measures concerning the reopening of pools and restaurants in the county? What are you hearing about that?
I think they voted on it.
They said yes to
all 17.
Yeah.
I think they're being responsible as they can. We're trying to slow the spread. Everything's still going to be open. There's a little medium here. There's some caveats to this. You know, if all you can do is maintain 25% of your dining room, it may be worth it to stay at takeout. There's a couple restaurateurs I've talked to where they said, you know, I can't bring the staff back on if my dining room is going to be at most 25% full. I can't do it. And so I respect that. I mean, that's a business decision. I understand it completely. So not to mention the fact that there's a lot of people that aren't going to be comfortable going out to eat anyway.
Yeah, I thought I thought it was 50% or lower the capacity, but anyway.
And if that's the case, I'm sorry I have the number wrong, but
yeah.
I think that the Board of Supervisors, the City Council, even our congressional leaders, both sides of the aisle, everybody's trying to kind of get their own head wrapped around this. For those of us that aren't physicians or have no medical training at all, it's a hard thing to do. But all the stuff you've been hearing your whole life rings true. Be healthy, be active, eat well, and you reduce your chances of coming out on the short end of this. And so that's what we got to keep in that lane. We got to keep that message going. And then we also, in the meantime, until these vaccines are ready, I think there's a shorter path to at least establishing some protocols and having the supplies ready, at the ready, for ERs and hospitals in their hot zones, in the areas where they're treating COVID. They
right.
have a COVID treatment area. They have all the tools in the toolbox and the newest tools in the toolbox that we know of to get them. And that's the only way I can think about this as a public policy guy. So what we did here in Tucson is one of the things that I talked about 30 doctors around the country, including local guys here. And the number one thing the doc said was testing, testing, testing. They said, there cannot be enough testing for this disease. The earlier, the better. The more, the better. If you can get another test after the fact, the better. So the city of Tucson is going to partner with Pima County in principle and with the U of A in collaboration with what the U of A is already doing and Pima County is already doing. So the city of Tucson has a agenda item this Tuesday to use some of our CARES Act money to start some significant testing. We're going to start off with our employees, and then I want to open it up to the public. I want to try to do about 1,000 tests a day. I don't know if we'll get there, but we're going to go for it. And it isn't a very insane amount of the – it's actually a very modest amount of the CARES Act money we have, so it's worth the investment to me. And we're going to try to contract either with one of the few local labs and a few of our healthcare providers to set up some additional drive-through testing sites where, hey, if you want a test, we're going to get you a test.
All right.
That's the first thing we're going to do.
Paul, we're coming up on the hard break with CBS News, but I'm going to keep you over the break because I want to talk about some economic issues in that report yesterday, which was very encouraging from Moody's Analytics, that Tucson, one of top 10 cities, positioned to do very well in the revival after the pandemic. So we're going to talk some economic issues with Paul Cunningham, but we're going to take our break with CBS News. How bad was your leak there at home? It sounds like your washing machine died.
No, not my washing machine. I lost my the dryer, the pipe that pumps out the exhaust for the dryer has collapsed on me.
Oh, my goodness. Little Homer.
So I have to... Yeah, I'm digging into the drywall, and then I have to reassemble the piping that goes into through the roof. And then after I do that, I've got to reattach the dryer and rehook up the dryer.
All right.
And even then, we might have already burned it out. So
okay. Well, stick with us. We'll take our break right here. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Be right back with Councilman Paul Cunningham.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
If it can't be grown, then it must be mined. Cause without minerals, you never find your phones, your cars, your solar panels, or your smart TVs with your favorite channels. Hospitals, schools, and public facilities result from mining's vast abilities. Dividends, taxes, and high-paid employment come from mining for your enjoyment. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Moe's Gallery in Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery in Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Speaking of green things, we are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Hi, everybody. I'm Bill Buckmaster on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news talk. Green Things is your headquarters, well, for everything green. They're a 13-acre site. They're doing very well. It's hard times for so many businesses, but they've been hanging in there. And after all, they are taking advantage of this interest, this renewed interest that people have in gardening. And so where are you going to get your plants? Where are you going to get your trees? Green Things. Green Things. AZ.com is their website. Also, ZocaloVillage.com. Some good news. Some friends in Wyoming just notified me. Really, Yellowstone National Park is kind of the iconic national park in the United States. I believe it is the oldest national park in the park system. Well, the news is Yellowstone and its sister park, Grand Teton, will open their doors to guests on Monday, May 18th. That is good news. Can the Grand Canyon National Park be far behind? Let's hope it opens up as well very soon. Tucson City Councilman and Vice Mayor Paul Cunningham is with us on the live line. Paul, we talked about this a little bit at the top of the show yesterday. This news was just breaking. It was from Moody's Analytics. The report was at Forbes magazine. Tucson was named one of the top 10 cities positioned to thrive following the pandemic. That's good news.
We were pretty fiscally responsible over the last 3 and 4 years. We ran some surpluses, and we didn't squander them. That's a real testament to the manager. So from a fiscal, as an organization, we're fiscally sound, which is a good thing.
And the reason... Well, the reasons they gave Tucson very low population density, relatively high levels of education attainment. And it's interesting, there are a couple of other on that list. I think Durham, North Carolina, gets another university town in there. There was actually a third university town in the list back in my home area, back in the Midwest. Madison, Wisconsin, is also positioned to do very well. And that's why it is so important, if it is at all safely possible. And President Robbins has said he's planning on campus reopening and face-to-face classes. Not only is it important from the economic point of view for the University of Arizona, but think about all the merchants that depend, Paul Cunningham, on the UA.
Right. Well, we're, like I said, they've got some modeling that says that we've got it. We're in a decent position. Part of, I think, that article reported that we'd be attractive for companies who are going to move out of some of the bigger cities. So again, that's just like the modeling with the pandemic. I mean, it's still modeling. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen for sure. It's nice to be on a list like that. I'm really excited to hear it, and I was really excited to read it yesterday. But the bottom line is that's kind of let's get it done. To me, that's not a rest on. I mean, the problem is for me on a personal standpoint is if we don't deliver and we don't recover really well, then they're going to say, "Well, you were in the best position to deliver. What happened?" So we've got to be ready, and we'll try to. I hate to say use the word sell Tucson, but we'll try to promote Tucson as a place that's a great destination for any new business, any new type of industry. And maybe we'll latch on and we'll get a couple. We were working on one thing right before this all happened, which I thought we had a really good possibility. It's obviously now on hold. So we'll see kind of what happens next.
I'll tell you, we're in good position, I think, with California announcing L.A. County, at least they'll be shut down for the next 3 months. You're going to see a lot of people from California coming to Arizona, maybe to our high country, to the mountains. But we're going to have, I think people are going to be traveling closer to home. And I think Tucson is well positioned for that, Paul Cunningham.
Yeah, I mean, we have some, like I said, there's some opportunity for us. we have we're in an interesting situation in Tucson. In our hiring lands, the summer doesn't hit nearly as hard as it does in places near Phoenix. So like if you're in the foothills, you're in Tank Verde Valley, even in Sarita, where you're south here, your elevation goes up 1,000 feet, and all of a sudden the summers are a few degrees lower and you get a little bit more precipitation. Instead of 11, 12 inches, you're looking at 13, 14. And all of a sudden, you know, those afternoon rains make the summer a lot more tolerable. So we've got some interesting things just from a climate standpoint. We've also been really good stewards of our water. So, you know, we used to be 25 years ago, the biggest discussion with Tucson was how long will our water last us? Well, now we have a good century of water. And I bet you will dollars to donuts will be even more responsible. So that will be a sustainable water system. So those are some of the things that I think have put us in that position. It's good to hear. And in economically, we're going to do as good as people are comfortable being returning to normal. And so, again, I go back to we've got to have that widespread testing and we've got to put as many tools in the perennial toolbox for our doctors to be able to use right there on site. And that's all I can do from a public policy perspective to put us in the best position to come out of this.
Can I clarify one thing that we talked about earlier about the county going ahead and codifying on these different restrictions? The county health department oversees then all of the restaurants in the county? I mean, how does this?
The mechanism they'll use that for is through the Department of Public Health, Arizona, the county health department.
Okay.
So Pima County Health Department will they're the ones who regulate it, and through the governor's order, the way I understand it is we can't supersede his order, but we can create ordinances on how we enforce the gist of his order. So that's kind of how that's going down. I get it. It's fine. We're not going to go against the governor. This is what we can't have in Tucson. We can't have a situation where city cops or Pima County Sheriff's deputies are at a business telling it to close down, and that business is saying, the governor said I could be open.
Right.
We can't have jurisdictional fights there. No. That isn't even worth it. In some counties and states and cities, that has happened in the course of this, and I'm very much against that. We have to respect the governmental system we have, whether we disagree with it or not. I can say publicly, you know, I get the pressure the governor's under. Maybe he's a little early, but we were going to have some type of provisional opening eventually. I just hope that it doesn't cause a second surge. And I also hope that before we get to any type of second surge, we have some treatment protocols and some widespread testing in place that will control that mortality rate.
I think he was pointing out, and it didn't get a lot of publicity, that the number of testing has really gone up here in Arizona, and the percentage of positives has really been dropping. I believe it's now under 5%. He was talking about that yesterday.
Yeah, the serology test that the U of A started, and hats off to Dr. Mike Dake and Dr. Lugich, Nikolai Lugich, and Dr. Bobby Robbins, who basically kind of took the bull by the horns and created an antibody test, which I think is one of the most accurate in the country. And had they not done that, we wouldn't be in that position. We'd still be 50th out of 50th as far as states go in testing. So the University of Arizona did that. And Tucson did that, and that's why the University of Arizona is so important to Tucson. So that's a great thing. And then what the city's going to do is we're going to say, all right, we've got these great antibody tests. Let's put some virological tests in the pipeline. And now if somebody – and ultimately, again, this is assuming, and we have to wait until some RCTs come out that say that convalescent plasma is a real thing. But if that does happen, we'll be in a position to have somebody antibody tested and virologically tested in the same day, and possibly be able to get plasma from them. And that would be a really cool thing. We'd probably be the only city in the country with a unique system like that.
All right, Paul Cunningham, we're going to let you go and get back to work. Work being home repairs that it will be facing you. That's a staggering job that you've got ahead of you.
Well, I got to get some pliers out and bend the metal, and then it'll be fine.
All right. Thank you, Paul.
Talk to you soon.
Okay, Paul Cunningham, Vice Mayor, City of Tucson. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things, Ocala Village Studios. Be right back with the columnist, to very popular column, Street Smarts, in the Arizona Daily Star, David Layton. If you're curious about a street name, call us 790-2040. We'll try to get it answered for you. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA Board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. This portion of the program presented by our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Just a three-hour trip. Road trip time. As Arizona starts to open up, people are going to be looking for places close to home to get away. How about Southwest New Mexico, a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment? Go to southwestnewmexico.org for a complete list of great places to stay and all sorts of great ideas about how to recreate in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Let's welcome David Layton with us to the Buckmaster Show. David writes the Street Smarts column. It appears, I believe, every Monday of the month in the Arizona Daily Star. David, how are you?
Not too bad. Yeah, it appears the first Monday of every month.
First Monday of every month in the Arizona Daily Star. What was this about? You were featured, was it the Travel Channel recently?
Correct. Actually, last month I was on twice, actually, on a show called The Dead Files. It's kind of like a ghost hunter show, but they had me interviewed as a guest journalist and guest historian on this show on the April 16th and April 23rd episodes of the show on the Travel Channel.
And what were you talking about?
Both episodes actually were referring to, or at least I was talking about, aviation crashes. So plane crashes that happened here in Tucson and one in Marana.
Hmm. Which ones were those?
Neither one was well known. One was a pilot flying, I think it was like a Cessna, a little Cessna, and he crashed. And then the other one, I think, was a helicopter crash. That's a military one. I think it was back in the 60s, 70s on the second one. And the first one, I think, was in the 50s, if I remember correctly.
Speaking of airports, you were featuring, was it El Tiro Road in your most recent column in the Star?
Well, the last Street Smarts that I ran here in the Star was actually a subdivision called El Tirador. It means the shooter, but it was based on the street name that was created earlier called El Tiro, which means the shot. And that road actually went to the Marana Army Airfield that was built back in like World War II. So that was kind of a side note to it. The streets are mainly based on like historical weapons, like the Dillinger, which was a small gun used to assassinate Abraham Lincoln, for example. But yeah, the El Tiro Road, which led to the Marina Army Airfield, which is now called the El Tiro Glider Port, is what it's like, a glider center, was part of the last one.
I didn't even know we had a glider port. You're saying there's a port devoted to gliders in Marana?
Yeah, it's called El Tiro Glider, I think, Glider Port or something like that. It's something similar to that, but it's for gliders. Back in World War II, there were, I don't know if it was like three or four or five, they weren't Air Force bases, but they were training fields to train pilots in Marana. And that particular one, I think, was number five. That's now the glider airport.
And why are all the street names in that area, why are they all tied to a particular firearm? Was this someone that obviously was into that, I guess, right?
Yeah, the engineer on the project, on the subdivision, that's called El Tirador, he was an avid hunter, according to his son. So he actually had quite a few firearms. And I think it was just kind of a cool theme for the subdivision to have, you know, name after old firearms.
Like Musket Road.
Right, yeah. Musket Road, yeah. Flintlock, yeah. Derringer, you know, stuff like that. So yeah. I think he just came up with a theme. And since he was a hunter, and on top of it, it was connected with El Tiro Road, which was created several years earlier. He just, I think, went off of that. Because there's actually several subdivisions around there that take their name and street names from the original street name, El Tiro Road. Like there's El Tiro Estates, there's Hunter Subdivision, another one where the streets were named by Jeannie Anderson as well, named for animals like the whitetail and antelope and animals commonly hunted in the wild.
It's fascinating because every time I have you on the show, I've gotten so now when I'm driving around Tucson and Pima County, I'm looking at street names and I'm wondering, who the heck was that person? I mean, it's just, there's a story, David Layton, isn't there, behind every one of these street names?
I don't know about everyone, but I mean, there's a lot. There's definitely a lot of, you know, street names and stuff like that. There's origins, and, you know, there are little hidden histories that still exist today about people or things that used to exist in Tucson, but it's kind of hidden because people don't necessarily know, you know, where that street name comes from. You know, it's just a name. Oh, I live on this street or that. You know, a lot of times they don't know who or what it's named for, and then you dig up the history, and, you know, it's kind of a fascinating history. So,
where do you get your ideas? People make suggestions, and do you welcome that?
A lot of the street names I've done are suggestions by readers or listeners. They'll email me, and, you know, they're ones I'll look into. Some of them, you know, occasionally, like, I'll just come across them. Or, like, next month's street smarts will be Sutton Lane. It's a small little street off of River Road near the Jewish Community Center. It's where River Road meets Alvernon. And the son of the guy who it's named for actually had lived on that piece of property, joined the military, moved away, came back to Tucson, joined the police force, but was living in a completely different area of town. And then he noticed it a few times that that's the street name was there, because it wasn't officially called anything. It was just a dirt road. And so he contacted me. I did the research. I had a title company search the property. And, you know, lo and behold, it was named for his family. And he had told me that people used to call it that name. There was no name there officially. It was just a dirt road to a couple of farms. They said people would call it because his dad owned 50% of the property. All of the west side of the road was his property for many years. So people just started calling it that. And then it wasn't, I mean, it's funny because it's in the newspaper as early as 1970. They lived there like in the 50s. And like even before there was actually a street name officially named, the newspapers were actually calling it by that name. It wasn't until 1992 before Sutton Lane actually officially became a street.
Wow. And your most commonly asked question about a street, I'm going to guess, and I don't think I've asked you this before, is it Speedway Boulevard?
I think the most common one is Alvernon.
Alvernon.
And
go ahead. I've got a little bit of time. Quickly, what is the story about that?
I've never, you know, totally solved that. I know it takes its name from Alvernon Heights, which was on the corner of Alvernon and Broadway on the southwest corner or southeast corner. There was a property owned by a guy named John H. Roberts who owned the Alvernon Heights. Now, I don't know if it's a ranch or a homestead or what it is. I've never been able to fully solve it, but I know the street takes its name, Alvernon Way takes its name from that property that he owned.
All right, David Layton, always a pleasure. We will look for your column the first Monday, correct, of the month in the Arizona Daily Star.
Correct.
Thanks,
Dave.
Thank you, David. David Layton, always fun talking about street names, which is really fascinating. If you start catching yourself looking at them like I've been doing lately, it seems like, oh, man, wonder why that name is the way it is. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. Thanks for joining us. On behalf of my fine engineer, producer, and my friend, John Couch, we thank you and urge you to stick around for the Dave Ramsey Show on 10:30, The Voice, trusted news talk. Have a great afternoon.